Across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast, my name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for coming back to my show, for keeping the faith with it, and also for spreading the word about it wherever in the world you are. Thank you for your many emails lately and the good response to the shows that we've done. Tell your friends about the show because we need to spread the word about it. You know, the bigger we get, the better it is and the more we can develop the show. So go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv. Check us out. Tell your friends, leave me some feedback, and if you can, leave a donation to keep the work going. Just a couple of shout-outs, people to say hello to, who've emailed in the last week or so, just a few of the emails that I've had here. Nice one from Kevin Delgado in San Diego, suggesting Jim Mars. Now, Kevin, I have talked to Jim on radio a couple of times. I have put another bid in for him. I sent him an email yesterday. So let's see if he gets back to us. Would love to have him on, as you would. James Sklar in Los Angeles loves the show. James, good to hear from you. Sklar, there was a guy called Rick Sklar who ran WABC Radio in New York for years when it was a music station. He was a bit of an icon in radio, no longer with us. Any relation, James? Jim in Oklahoma, once more on remote viewing. That makes me wonder what happened to Major Ed Dames, who I had on this show a couple of times online, had him on the radio quite a few times, and the last encounter I had with Major Ed Dames, a remote viewer, was on City Talk Radio in Liverpool, where I was doing a phone-in about 3 years ago. And from what I remember, the show was a very controversial one, got a lot of controversial calls, a lot of people who didn't agree, and quite a few people who did, but we haven't really spoken since then. So, Ed Dames, if you're listening, be keen to talk to you again. Doug, chemtrails. Yep, should be doing that, Doug, you're right. Maybe I can get Linda Moulton Howe on here about that. Paul Sherman is talking to me about Iowa, and we've had this thing on the show that a few people have suggested that I should come and visit Iowa. Let me tell you that at the moment I feel like I need a break, so maybe I'll make that trip. I haven't been to America in, how many years is it now? 6 or 7, and I'm getting withdrawal symptoms, so I think I need to come. Sue Tchaikovsky. Sue, I hope I pronounced that properly. Thank you very much for your nice email, and I take your point. Martin Kutika, thanks for your email. Thomas Finley, ex-United States Air Force, now living in the southeast of England. Thomas, thanks for your email. Intriguing. Would like to know more about you and what you do. So if you have a website, anything like that, let me know. Leslie in Winnipeg, Canada. Leslie, thank you for your very nice email. Leslie in Canada, spread the word, keep the faith. Now, here in the UK, it's the hay fever season. So if I sound a little bit drowsy, it's because of these pills. I've got them here that I'm taking, and it says one a day. And it says, can relieve sneezing, runny nose, and itchy eyes. Well, it's sort of working. It is. But it says it can make you a little drowsy. And I think it's also doing that. But a nice feeling anyway. And by the looks of the weather outside, it's turned very warm here. We've had some sunshine in London, but also I think it's threatening a thunderstorm now, as quite often happens in this case. Okay, let's get to the show. This time round, a very interesting guest who you suggested. The man's name is Tim Swartz. He's an Indiana native, his biography says, and an Emmy Award-winning television producer and videographer, and the author of a number of popular books, including The Lost Journals of Nikola Tesla. That's a subject I wanted to get into for a long time. Evil Agenda of the Secret Government, Time Travel, a How-To Guide, which is going to be the main theme we'll talk about here, and Teleportation from Star Trek to Tesla. An interesting guy, and a number of you have suggested him, so we're going to get him on right now. Please keep the faith with the show, like I say. Keep sending the email feedback in at www.theunexplained.tv. Always pleased to hear what you think of the show. It is vital that I know what you think so I can develop the show the way that you want it. As I always say, we're not a big company, so if you want changes made in it, all you have to do is come to me and we can make them. It's as easy as that. And that's the democratic aspect of what we're doing here in the new media online. And I find it really exciting. Thank you very much for being part of The Unexplained. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, who designed our fantastic website and gets the show out to you and does all our web maintenance work. Top guy, Creative Hotspot, and Adam available to you for the best web work. I totally, completely recommend him. Thank you to Martin for the theme tune, and like I say, thank you to you for being part of The Unexplained. Okay, let's get to the United States now. And to Tim Swartz. Tim, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Howard. It's a great pleasure being with you today.
Well, you know, you're another one of my guests who've been suggested by my listeners. I've had a few emails about you, so you've definitely made a mark out there, Tim.
Oh, fantastic. I like making marks, so that's good to hear.
Well, you know, it's better to be remembered, isn't it, one way or the other. How would you describe yourself? I gave a description here, but it was only based on your biography. It says Emmy Award-winning television producer, videographer. But how would you describe yourself?
Oh, my gosh. Now, that's a $5 million question, asking somebody how they describe themselves. Well, you know, I always like to consider myself the nice guy researcher. You know, I mean, you've seen the guests that you have had on your show. You know very well that when it comes to these kinds of subjects, you know, UFOs, the paranormal, conspiracies, things like that, that you tend to have a lot of extremely abrasive personalities, especially with each other.
Oh, it's massively polarized. You know, I'll get one person on, let's not name any names, but I'll get one person on and I'll say, oh, I had so-and-so on my show a few shows ago, and they'll say, I don't believe in anything that man says.
Oh, I know. And that's the thing that I've always wanted to try to gravitate away from, is because, you know, so much of this research, we really depend on each other. You know, you can't work effectively independently. We really need each other to compare notes. And I mean, you know, one researcher is going to find out something that, you know, others may not. And if we don't share our information with each other, then we're not going to get anywhere in trying to uncover, you know, what's actually going on. But unfortunately, I mean, that's it's easier said than done. So I always try to be, you know, the nice researcher. You know, I mean, I tend to try not to be abrasive to anybody or to call anybody, you know, nasty names. I mean, I really don't think that is a proper or a mature way to conduct oneself.
Well, that's almost a very British way of doing things. You know, our view of things is that everybody's entitled to his or her view. It's a democracy, free country, and we supposedly have free speech here.
Well, yeah, exactly. And of course, the attitude that I have then tends to rub a lot of people the wrong way.
Which all goes to prove, and it proves true in broadcasting as well, as you know. You know, you can please some of the people some of the time, but you can't please all the people all the time. So all you can do is your best at any one time, I think.
Well, you know, I always try. I try to please myself. And that's the thing. You know, I'm always, since I was a kid, I've always loved mysteries and unexplained things. You know, I want to find out what's going on. You know, why is the sky blue? I'd ask my dad. He'd say, you know, I don't know. Get away from me. You know, and I want to know, you know, what, how far up is outer space? You know, and be like, I don't know. Get away from me. You know, that kind of thing. So from an early age, I wanted to know what was going on. And that's one of the reasons that I got into this field, is that I just have this unquenchable thirst for knowledge, and especially knowledge that people aren't too sure about. I mean, you know, I mean, we know basically, you know, why the sky is blue or why clouds form or anything like that. But, you know, we don't know how far space goes. We don't know if people are really seeing, you know, UFOs or Bigfoot or things like that. You know, and those are the things that have just fascinated me.
And did you, presumably you did because of some of the things you've researched over the years, as I have, did you reach a stage where you started to believe, and for me, I had to get into my 30s before I started thinking that way, that perhaps we're not entirely being told the truth about everything that we hear about people who die, are assassinated, about whether UFOs and aliens actually have been here, and that kind of stuff?
Oh, yes. I mean, that's a guaranteed. And, you know, since it was the UFO subject that I first latched onto when I was younger, it was pretty clear to me very early on that there were some things that are not being shared universally with the general population. You know, I mean, and that's a guaranteed. I mean, there's always going to be secrets out there. I mean, you know, you look at the United States when it comes to a lot of files and paperwork concerning World War II. I mean, how long ago has it been since that's ended? Yet there are still massive amounts of information that are still being kept secret by the United States government, and they're not cleared to be open, you know, for another, what, I think 50, 75 years, and there's no guarantee that when that time comes, they just won't extend, you know, they won't extend it. I mean, it was pretty clear to me early on that that there are secrets being kept mm-hmm. from the general population, you know, for whatever reason, and that's kind of the rub. I mean, you know, people will come forwards. You know, you have these whistleblowers who will say that, yeah, the government is, you know, keeping secrets from the general population about the truth of UFOs. But how do we know that these whistleblowers aren't part of the same process? You know, I mean,
you're talking information and disinformation. That's fascinating stuff.
One of my early articles that I wrote for a magazine called UFO Universe, you know, back in the middle 1990s, dealt with the subject of disinformation. And, you know, at that point, you know, here in the United States at least, that was not a very familiar term. Now we hear it all over the place. But when I wrote this article, it was still a very, very new subject, and I got a lot of criticism for it because there were people were like, well, you know, the government or the military may keep secrets from us, but they won't deliberately go and try to muddy the waters and throw everybody off into different directions with a little bit of truth and a little bit of fakery. And now we know that that has probably been a favorite scenario by intelligence agencies, you know, not just in the United States, but, you know, in countries all over the world.
I want to get on to other topics in a moment, but it's true, isn't it, that people are more questing these days and more questioning than perhaps they were. But nevertheless, I still find faith in the government greater in America, I think, than I do here. You know, I went to cover a couple of anniversaries of 9/11, and I actually broadcast live from Ground Zero. Mm. And on both occasions, I went around talking to people and saying to them, you know, are you sure that the government here can keep you safe? Are you confident after this? And I would say the ratio was probably 4 people out of 5 said, I absolutely, probably even higher than that, you know, maybe 9 out of 10 in those vox pops, as we call them, were completely confident that the United States government had their best interests at heart and would do everything it could to protect them and was telling them the truth. That is not something you find over here. But, you know, that's just a by-the-by. I wanted to talk about 3 topics that I believe, and by the looks of your writings, you believe are sort of connected. They are Tesla, time travel, teleportation. Where would you like to start?
Oh, my gosh. Well, we can start talking first about Nikola Tesla.
You know what? We must be psychic. I wanted you to do that, and you did. Simply because we haven't talked about Tesla on this show before, and I've had so many emails over the last 4 or 5 years from people saying, please talk about the life, work, and mysteries surrounding Nikola Tesla. So tell me.
Well, yeah, you see, that's one of the things about Tesla. You know, you haven't had anything on your show about him. People want to know about him. And unfortunately, if you were to depend on, you know, our school systems, how we are educated when we are children on learning about Tesla, then you're going to be sorely disappointed. I think nowadays there may be a little bit more interest in Tesla, thanks in part to the internet and the you know, just the whole thing with being able to get information out there better than it used to be. When I was a child and went to school in the 60s, nothing was ever mentioned about Nikola Tesla and his contributions. We were taught that basically Edison Thomas Edison was the creator of the modern electrical system that we have here in the United States and all over the world. You know, the whole grid system thing. I mean, he was the he came up with the light bulb, so you know, naturally he came up with the whole electrical system. But as we all know, or we should know at least, the grid system, the AC electrical system, is a product of Nikola Tesla. But you know, for years in the Smithsonian Institution, there was a display showing Edison's light bulb and his contributions to the development of AC electricity in the United States. It wasn't until very recently that that has been fixed, and I guess just a small notation attributing Tesla's contribution to this. That's one of the reasons, we don't hear too much about Tesla. First of all, Tesla was born in what's now Croatia, Serbia, and in 1856. He wasn't born in America. Edison, he was the all-American boy, and. So I think that naturally Edison is always going to get better play, here in the United States than Tesla ever will.
Well, it's the same thing with the invention of television. There are, a lot of us will say that television was invented by John Logie Baird, and the Russians will say that there was another guy who actually invented television there. There's been a dispute over that for decades.
Mm-hmm. And probably they're all correct in one way or the other.
And there was also, let's be fair, there was a guy in America, one of the Great Plains states, I'm not sure which, who is also credited with inventing, I think, a mechanical system of television. So, I think, three contenders for that crown.
Well, and, Tesla, as far back as the late 19th century, he had an idea being able to broadcast moving images over radio. And everybody, when it comes, it's such a, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Almost like an incestuous brew when it comes to the development of technology and inventions and all that, because you have so many people who have their fingers in the pie, so to speak, afterwards it's really difficult to try to discern just who had the first idea and who did what.
And sometimes I tend to think that when ideas are out there, if you believe in a sort of common consciousness, then a number of people can be working on the same thing at the same time, because an idea appears when its time has come, if you see that sort of train of thought that I'm getting to.
Oh, yeah, well, that's Sheldrake's, I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Yes.
That's his whole idea of the morphic field. That when an idea starts to form, that it can actually be, picked up by a number of different people at the same time. And that's why, you'll see that when somebody announces a new discovery, you'll find that maybe a day before or even just the day after, somebody will make the same announcement and everybody will go like, oh, wait, that was my idea. And you'll find out that they're working on the very same thing at the very same time and coming to the same conclusions within a very close proximity of each other. And so, you see that quite a bit, especially, during Tesla's time and with a lot of Tesla's earlier experiments. Myself, I first heard about Nikola Tesla, and I love telling the story because it was in, 1982. And I used to work for a television station in Dayton, Ohio, which is right next, Dayton, Ohio is right next to the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And one of my beats was to, every couple of months, I'd go over there and talk with the press liaison there. And we'd try to come up with, some kind of interesting story, something, like visual and fun that was, some kind of experiment or research that was going on at the base. For example, we did a story on, they had like a huge wind generator that they had placed horizontally on the floor in the chamber, and they trained people how they trained reserves on how to skydive properly, and whether this giant fan would blow upwards, and the guy would basically float around the room like he was falling from an airplane. Well, I mean, this was back in the early 80s. Now you'll see, in holiday parks, they have the same kind of device as an entertainment ride for children.
Yes, they do.
But back then, that was pretty cutting edge. So I remember one day I was sitting at the desk of this press liaison, and he was going through his folder trying to find something interesting for us, and it seems to me this was around the time that Ronald Reagan had come up with the idea of the Star Wars research and development, trying to come up with devices, missiles or ray guns or whatever, to try to knock Soviet missiles out of the air.
Basically a high-tech umbrella or shield, a sort of modern equivalent of the old chrome dome, wasn't it?
Exactly. So there was a lot of federal money being thrown around to various places to try to come up with some kind of missile shield. The press liaison was telling me about a few things, and he made this an off-the-cuff remark, and then he went on to something else. He said, and we're doing some experiments based on the inventions of that mad scientist Nikola Tesla.
Really?
And then he went on to something else, and that was all that was said. And I was like, Nikola Tesla? Who's that? And I didn't have time to ask him. But that name, Nikola Tesla's name just sounds exotic,
But and also, for somebody in that position to say, we're doing some experiments based on the work of that mad scientist, well, no journalist worth anything is going to leave it at that.
That's exactly it. I was like, well, who's Nikola Tesla? Never heard of him before. So, at the time I had, some pretty good resources. Then there was no internet. So, you'd have to go to libraries and places like that and do actual research, looking in, real physical books and microfilm and microfiche.
Oh, I remember those days.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but see, I also had access to a number of different resources across the country, through the various news feeds, AP and UPI and things like that. So that was really when I first discovered who Nikola Tesla was and what little information that there was out there available at the time, because later in his life he'd become extremely marginalized and basically he was just considered a kook, because he was saying some pretty outrageous things. I mean, he was talking about free energy, flying machines that didn't require propellers or jets or things like that. He was talking about death rays, and there's even an old Superman cartoon made by the Fleischer brothers in the 1940s that dealt with a mad scientist who had a death ray that he was using to melt buildings in Metropolis. And that mad scientist's name was Tesla.
So the man had a certain amount of profile, but was always regarded as being a bit out there. Where do you think that these ideas came from? Because they're so different from stuff, as far as we know, that other people were working around. Where do you think the inspiration for these sorts of things would have come from in this guy's mind?
Well, I should say that, in Tesla's earlier years, when he was really, coming up with excellent inventions right and left, he had a great amount of respect and was making, a lot of money. But for various reasons, which we can talk about later, he fell into disrespect. But to answer your question, I think that they came from... I think they came from Tesla. Tesla is, I think, one of the great geniuses of mankind's history. I mean, and there's not a lot of them. I mean, you have, Leonardo da Vinci and Tesla. You know, some people would say, you know, Einstein. But, you know, there's not a lot of people that I think really would fit into this category who can, you can honestly say, has made a number of great contributions to mankind and its further development. So, but, you know, you have to remember that that Tesla had an eidetic memory. He did not forget anything, which, you know, can be a blessing and a curse. You know, you remember every little thing from, you know, probably, you know, as far back as you can remember. You know, you can remember what the weather was like, you know, on July 13th, you know, 1867.
Well, it's a bit like having an overstocked library in the days when, you know, we used books more than we do. Finding the thing you want is more difficult because there are too many books there.
Very much so.
I mean, that sounds very simplistic, but I suppose that's what he was dealing with.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, that's really a good way of putting it. You know, you get too technical on trying to describe these things, and you tend to lose people. But no, that's an excellent way of putting it. And Tesla had a remarkable ability that if he had been working on an idea for something, all of a sudden he would see almost like a vision right in front of his eyes, almost like what we would describe today as, you know, like a hologram or 3D, you know, from a movie. But this, he could see the invention in front of his eyes, just as clear as you are looking at your computer monitor right now, and he could actually make this vision rotate. It was three-dimensional, and he could see every aspect of it. He could even explode it, you know, like a blueprint, and see every minutia part of how it should be built. And this was how he first came up with the AC motor. He was walking in a park one day with a friend. And all of a sudden, he had this vision of the AC motor. Now, he had been pondering its development for quite a while, because he had been told earlier by a school professor that the AC motor basically would be a, how did he put it, like a perpetual motion device. It would be just about that crazy. And Tesla was going to prove them wrong, that you could create an AC motor. He just didn't know how he was going to do it. Well, his mind obviously somewhere, you know, below the depths of normal consciousness had been working on this, and when it was ready, it brought it out to him. And he had to stop and draw the design in the dirt on the ground with a stick before he lost it. You know, I mean, he didn't have any paper or anything like that with him, so he had to, you know, draw the design you know, just right then and there. And that's how he operated with a lot of his amazing inventions, is that they would just appear to him like a vision.
But he ran into problems, didn't he? And is the reason that he ran into problems was that he literally was so far ahead of everybody else that he was ahead of corporate America, he was ahead of vested interests, and he was upsetting people.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, right from the very beginning, when he came to the United States, he ruffled feathers because he wanted to work for Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison was Tesla's hero. And so he came into Edison's office. He had several notes of letters of introduction from professors and from other respected people that he had worked for in Europe, to try to get a job with Edison. And, you know, Edison saw this, you know, this kind of like this dapper guy from Europe. I mean, he was dressed very well. He spoke several languages, and Edison was this, you know, this your typical stereotypical, you know, American with a frayed shirt and bags under his eyes. And so he gave Tesla a job which Edison's own engineers had told him would probably take at least a month to complete. And this required a massive rewiring of a DC electrical system that wasn't working right. It kept blowing itself out, and nobody could figure out what the problem was. Well, Tesla went and finished the job within a week and came back to Edison. And Edison had made a promise to him. He says, you get this job done, and I'll pay you, I think it was like, $50,000, something like that. So Tesla came back within a week, and not only had he completed this rewiring, but he had improved upon it.
Okay.
And had said, where's my $50,000? And Edison basically, laughed him off, saying, well, you don't understand, American sense of humor. And that, and it that's where it started. Tesla stormed out in a huff, and vowed that he basically he'd show Edison, what the American sense of humor was all about.
So that put him outside the system, and one of those situations that we often find in life, that it's a good thing to be good, but sometimes you can be too good, and if you're too good too soon, you're going to put people's noses right out of joint.
Exactly. And see, Edison was, he had developed the direct current electrical system to try to provide electricity for houses and neighborhoods in Manhattan. DC is fine, but the problem with it is that the current doesn't travel very far through the wires. So you would have to have a substation every block or so. So, and that ends up being just really prohibitively expensive. Well, Tesla said, "Hey, look, I've got this I've got this AC motor. You can set it up, and you can have a generating plant hundreds of miles away. You don't have to have substations, every block or so to power these houses." And naturally, Edison, he could see his livelihood. He could see money going down the drain if Tesla was correct about his AC motor. So Edison did everything that he possibly could to fight Tesla. And Edison was very respected. In those days, he had a lot of high powered friends in corporations. And if it wasn't for the Westinghouse Company, who was in direct competition with Edison, Edison would have probably been successful in keeping Tesla and the AC motor stifled. It may have even have gone as far as we could have that type of electrical system today. DC current, where every block or so, you've got a regenerating plant that steps up the power.
So Tesla won that one, but he didn't win them all by any means.
Oh no, definitely not. Well, Tesla, because of his great genius, I think. I mean, he had great problems as well. I mean, he was highly eccentric, and as he grew older, I mean, these flaws in his character became even more apparent. I mean, for example, he detested pearls on women. Who knows why? I mean, it's like scratching your fingers on a chalkboard. That's the way to him, that visual element of pearls on women was like, fingernails across his mind or something. He was very fastidious in the way that he ate. I mean, he had to have, like a certain number of silverware. His napkins had to be at a precise location, and just little weird things like that that just later just grew and grew and grew as he got older, until he basically was just by himself. I mean, he really didn't want human contact. You know, but in his younger days, I mean, he was able to keep that under control enough that he was quite the society person. I mean, you know, he loved going to parties and get-togethers. He liked to dress up. Naturally, he was well educated and well spoken.
But as he got older, that all came unstuck. I mean, all I knew about him was this tremendous mystique about the man, that in later life, that he developed things and he knew things, like you talked about free energy, that had really upset the establishment, and the establishment, and the story so far indicates that might well be the case, made sure that this guy, you know, was kept quiet or kept on the margins, and after he died, his research disappeared. Is that right? Well, a lot of his research.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I think what really came to the head with Tesla is his concept of being able to deliver electrical power without the use of wires or the grid system. Now, you know, remember, I mean, this was the guy who first came up with the grid system. I mean, you know, he built the first electrical generating plant at Niagara Falls, and developed the dynamos and the wiring system, and you know how they could get to your houses and how they could be metered to pay off the corporations, you know, that were delivering this electricity. Well, as soon as he had finished this, Tesla embarked on the idea of being able to deliver electricity to your home, anyplace else, without the use of wires. And naturally, you know, the corporations and the companies that were supporting Tesla at the time, when they found out what he was trying to do, and Tesla almost did it. He had it down. And he was going to do it. And if it wasn't for the fact that at the last moment, his benefactors withdrew their support and money, Tesla would have been successful at initiating this concept. And probably today, I mean, we wouldn't be dependent on the grid system or anything like that. There would be, you know, like several generating plants scattered across the world, and we'd be getting our power from these. But Tesla came up with the idea as far back as late 19th century, and actually proved that it was possible that you could transmit electricity wirelessly. Howard, nowadays you'll hear a lot of scientists and physicists say that, oh, well, you know, I mean, yeah, you could do that, but, you know, Tesla was way off the mark because, any place that would have, say, like a wire sticking up in the air, you know, a church steeple or something like that, you know, it would be being zapped with electricity all the time from Tesla's device. Well, see, that's patently wrong because they're just thinking of the idea of taking a Tesla coil, ramping up the power to, you know, just extreme amounts, and then blasting them into the air like giant lightning bolts. Uh-huh. But that's not what Tesla was doing. Tesla actually was working more along the lines of resonant energy. And I have to say, Howard, you know, I'm a journalist. I'm not a scientist. Mm. I'm not even, you know, I can't say that I completely understand, you know, the physics that is involved with his experiments.
Reminds me of an experiment. I'm sure you've heard of this guy, but he's my radio hero. And, you know, I'm sure you're aware of Art Bell.
Sure.
And Art Bell, of course, did that overnight radio show Coast to Coast AM. He's in sort of semi-retirement now, but I think we all hope he'll come back soon. But I'll never forget when Art, because he had this enormous great home in Pahrump, Nevada, with loads of space around it, built himself this massive antenna.
Yes.
And couldn't explain, and I'm sure, Tim, you will have heard of this, but couldn't explain, and it was never really explained to any of us, and now he's not on air, so he can't talk about it anymore, how this thing was able to not generate, but somehow pick up enormous current. He would measure killing levels of current off this antenna, and that remained unexplained. And it was sort of, I think, you know, explained on air that this was something almost Tesla-esque.
Very much so. Part of Tesla's fascination was trying to come up with the ability to actually draw energy from the atmosphere. And I'm not talking about the air. I mean, I'm talking about, you know, the atmosphere that surrounds not only us but the planet and permeates the universe. There's just massive amounts of energy in various forms that are just ripe for the taking if somebody can just figure out, or in my belief, they have figured out for a long time on how to do it, but, you know, this kind of technology is basically being kept suppressed because nobody has yet come up with a way to charge us to get this energy, and it has military abilities as well, that the military is keeping this suppressed.
So the story goes, doesn't it, and I only know the bare bones of this story, you researched it in depth, but the story goes that Tesla knew lots of stuff, but he was this outsider, and the older he got, the more bizarre perhaps he became. And when he died, he had lots of stuff on the go and a lot of research on the go and a lot of documentation. But all that disappeared. And, you know, the questions have always been, well, who made sure that never got into the public domain?
Yes, well, and the one thing about Tesla is that he did not take a lot of notes himself. The majority of the notes and paperwork that are available to us now, some were written by Tesla. The majority of them, though, were written by his assistants and the people who worked for him. You know, like I said, Tesla just, he could see these visions in front of him on how a device would work. He'd maybe scribble it down, but then, see, he would tell his assistants how to build these things without really properly explaining, how these things actually worked. And that was part, and that's a problem with the transmission of electricity. Tesla actually had gone as far as that he was building a broadcast facility on the east coast of the United States that he had told the people who were supplying him money that this was going to be a massive worldwide radio station. And that not only would it be able to transmit voices and telegraph to places all over the world, but even visual images as well. I mean, this was going to be, like the BBC of the world in the 1910s.
And there is evidence from what I seem to remember that this stuff is possible, but it's technology that's not being used. I can remember being told when I worked in pirate radio, illegal radio in Dublin, Ireland, where the illegal stations operated like legit stations on land. And there was one station called Radio Nova there, and it had a massive 500,000 watt transmitter that covered, a lot of Europe. And the guy who ran that radio station, who's sadly not with us any longer, told me about a thing called the Luxembourg effect. And Radio Luxembourg was a radio station in Europe that played pop music, okay? When the BBC were not playing pop music, we got our pop music from Radio Luxembourg that was audible in the UK by night because of what happens to the ionosphere at night with AM radios. It happens in America as well. Your local stations go a long way. Same with Radio Luxembourg. That's how a lot of us got to hear pop music. But I was told about this thing called the Luxembourg effect, that I think, again, was Tesla-esque, where they tried to fire their AM signal up at the ionosphere, right up at it, and it spread out like a blanket and covered a vast, vast area. And if the story is correct, and I'd love it if somebody could, correct me or give me more information, that went so far, that broadcast, and was so clear that they were told to stop it. But the thing is called, apparently, the Luxembourg effect, if that's true.
Oh, yes, and it is true. In fact, the same general principles are being used by the United States at the HARP facility in Alaska, which of course is based on Tesla technology.
But that's deeply low frequency, and that goes for massive distances. But of course, they're not doing a whole lot of talking about that. Anything we know about that is anecdotal, isn't it?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
All right. We were going to talk about time travel, and It's not a big stretch, is it, to imagine that Tesla or somebody like him, because things like the Philadelphia experiment involved massive amounts of electric current and electromagnetic capabilities. You know, if the I talked to Al Bielik, who, you know, sadly he's no longer with us. He died this year, very, very sadly, who claimed to be part of the Philadelphia experiment. But if the U.S. government, the U.S. Navy was working on that stuff, and I sort of, having talked to Al, I think I believe they were, and I think I believe that what happened really did happen, then it's not a big stretch, is it, to believe that Tesla maybe knew some of this stuff even then?
Tesla told a newspaper reporter in Manhattan in, I think it was 1895, Tesla had had his laboratory in Manhattan at that time, and he was conducting research with his Tesla step-up transformer. And he was doing experimentations with radio frequency, and I said before, the transmission of electrical energy through the atmosphere. What had happened was that he was on a platform, and he was hit from the transformer by a spark that actually arced and jumped 3 feet through the air. And I think he said that it was he had it ramped up to like 3.5 million volts.
Good Lord!
Yeah, and the spark jumped three feet through the air and struck him on his right shoulder. Said if his assistant hadn't turned off the current instantly, it might have been the end of. And he said it might have been the end of me. What Tesla said though was that on contact with the resonating electromagnetic charge, he found himself outside. And this is the way that he actually put this at the time, his time frame reference, which is really interesting because this is something that this was a term that didn't really come up until Einstein started talking about time and effect.
You know, most of us heard that kind of talk on Star Trek, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, the time machine, sliders, and shows like that. but Tesla said that he could see his immediate past, present, and future all at once. But he was paralyzed within this electromagnetic field, almost like he was in a bubble, and that he was seeing all time and space in front of him all at once. And he had, you know, naturally he had trouble trying to describe this because, I mean we don't have the language capabilities. Our brains really, you know, are unable to try to even conceive the idea of being able to see the past, present, and future.
Is this what we call the space-time continuum?
Possibly. You know, that's one of those words that floats around. And
it's a great buzz phrase, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, it can be used for, you know, anything. It's interesting, though, because, you know, at the time, Tesla was not a religious man. He really didn't even he really hadn't even given any thought to the whole idea of time. That was just, you know, they were the way they were at the time. I mean, it was outside their concept. I mean, just like the idea of being able to, you know, fly a rocket ship to the moon. I mean, they really couldn't have conceived that very well at the time either. So, you know, later on in his life, Tesla actually became interested in Eastern philosophy because of their idea that time exists all at once. You know, there really is no past, present, and future. It's just an eternal state of now.
But there was that one happenstance incident where he became connected with something he believed. A man with a brain like that, presumably he took that further, or did he?
I think he did. Now, there have been a lot of writers who have said that Tesla had a real direct connection with the what's known as the Philadelphia experiment in the 1940s. I don't think that was the case. Tesla, by the time the Philadelphia experiment was operating, and of course, you know, I mean, they the people who were involved with this weren't quite sure what they were doing either. They were using purloined material that Tesla had, that they had gotten through various clandestine ways, i.e. they stole it. But at that time, Tesla was extremely ill of health and would not really have been capable of doing too much to assist with the Philadelphia experiment. For the research that I have uncovered shows that he was consulted, and you know, his opinions were asked, and he basically told them, don't do this. You know, the way that you have got it set up could have disastrous consequences for any living thing that's within these massively energized rotating magnetic fields.
Which is precisely what happened, because we have the stories of people being thrown forward in time or left stuck in the middle of steel decks on a ship to die, and the whole thing supposedly covered up.
Yep. Some of the survivors years later would inexplicably burst into flames, almost like a spontaneous combustion. And I'm not just talking about, you know, they'd burst into flames and then they could take the body and bury it. No, they'd burst into flames and there'd be ashes left. Nothing more.
And the very sad thing about all of this is that Al Bielik, the man who most recently had spoken most about all of this, you know, he died this year. I had the great privilege of doing a full show with him about 5 years ago. He talked, to my mind, totally credibly about this. And the reason I felt that way about him and still feel that way about him is that he told a story, the component parts of which related back to each other. Liars and fabricators and fantasists can't do that. He did.
Bielik was extremely well-spoken, but because his ideas were so, you know, wild, people just tended not to believe him. But I knew Al myself and spoke with him a number of times, and I always found his stories to be credible. And I don't ever remember though him ever saying to me that he ever saw Tesla physically on site. Mm. When all this was being, you know, developed. Of course,
but perhaps the least we can say is that these experiments and these ideas were inspired by him.
Oh, well, they weren't just inspired. I mean, the story that I had just related to you about Tesla's accident was the first indication that electricity and electromagnetics could have some kind of role to play in altering the space-time continuum, as you said.
And it would be unlikely, don't you think, and you've written about time travel, that the American government, possibly other governments, maybe the Russians, have been working on this stuff. If that stuff is out there to be experimented with, and we were doing it in the 40s, all right, it was risky, but when's that ever been a bar to anything? Nuclear testing, etc. It is a big stretch to believe that we're not working with that now and haven't been in the past, isn't it, really?
I would say that's a no-brainer. If you made that kind of discovery in the 1940s and could see the potential that, yes, that we could possibly have some kind of effect on time and space, you know, they're just not going to throw it aside. They're going to continue working on it. Now, of course, nowadays, I mean, we hear a lot of really, in my opinion, are extremely wild stories about Mars bases and being put in place basically by using the technology that was developed from the Philadelphia experiment. You have time cops where people are running back and forth, through the centuries, trying to stop certain events from happening.
It's all a fantastic thought, and I would love to be able to go back and, you know, take a look at my home city, Liverpool, maybe in the 1950s or something. But
wouldn't it be great?
Wouldn't it be great? I think anybody who says that they wouldn't want to do that, I would question whether they're telling entirely the truth. However, I hear, you know, Art Bell, great inspiration for me always. I can hear his voice in my head right now saying, if time travel exists, where are the time travelers? That's the problem, isn't it? Always. Where I mean, maybe there's a code of conduct and they keep themselves quiet. Maybe they come here on they're on a plane that we can't see or sense or visualize. Or maybe there are no time travelers.
I saw a great cartoon the other day that the caption of it is that the Titanic sank as a result of it being full to the brim of time travelers who came back to see why the Titanic sank.
I shouldn't laugh, but that's very, very good. I must write that one down. That's extremely good. But, that's the great dilemma. Unless, of course, we can only go forwards, maybe. You know, we can't go back. Who knows?
Well, and this is just speculation on my part, and I'm sure you've heard this before, but I've seen a lot of very good evidence that seems to show to me that certain UFO experiences and encounters could actually be the result of time travelers. And, I got to think about it at one time. What better way to disguise yourself, to a past society that, you know from history that there was something going on at that time, called UFOs that people said were extraterrestrial craft. Well, if you could go back in time, you could disguise yourself as that. And then any contact that you may have with a society in the past, well, you just tell, we're spacemen. We come from Venus or Zeta Reticuli or something like that.
That's another great thought, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, in the early 50s, people like George Damski was told, we're from Venus and Mars. And then, as years went by and, we got a little bit better at taking a look at these planets, we could see that probably wasn't true. Well, now the so-called occupants coming out of the UFOs they're telling us they're from even further away. We're from the other side of the galaxy. It's like when you're a kid and you have that girlfriend from Canada. Yeah, I've got a girlfriend. She's from Canada. Yeah, that's it.
So the story's tailored to fit the intelligence and sensibilities of whoever you're dealing with at the time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, yeah. That is fascinating. Do you think that anybody's actually doing commercial research into time travel now, that perhaps it's not a military project, it's something that business is doing quietly?
Well, I would say that that's a very good possibility, and it's funny that you should bring this up because I had heard somebody just the other day talking about UFO technology, whether or not if there was, say, a crashed extraterrestrial disk at Roswell, whether or not it's the military or the government who's doing the subsequent, research and tear down, seeing what kind of technology. Well, they could do that, but then that information could accidentally get leaked out through, the Freedom of Information Act. But if you have a corporation doing that kind of research, they don't have to tell you.
Commercial secrecy.
Yeah, they don't have to tell you anything.
Commercial secrecy.
Yeah, so, what better way to hide, your black budgets projects than to farm them out to trusted corporations that have, military and intelligence connections, but aren't beholden to the public like the federal government is.
Briefly, very, very quickly, Tim, because our time is running out, unfortunately, get into teleportation. Now, the first experiment in this, I believe, I seem to remember reporting on the news a year or so ago, has been done. Wasn't something, a molecule, I think, a particle, transferred from one place to another. So we're getting there, aren't we?
Yeah, well, there's, we're talking about at a quantum level, light particles are being transmitted, from one location to another. Tesla, though, he had the idea that possibly the Star Trek concept of teleportation, you tear the thing down to its molecular level, transmit it, say, like through radio, and then reassemble it at a location. Tesla thought that possibly that there could be a way that you could actually, open a hole in like a wormhole almost through time and space, so that you know you wouldn't have to be tore down to your molecular level, that you could just step through this hole and appear someplace else.
And if you can send electricity that way, which is what he was working on, then why can't you send other things that way?
Well, and there seems to be a natural way that this is happening, because we see like poltergeist occurrences, the noisy ghost, that say an object will disappear in one room and reappear in another. So obviously there is some kind of teleportation going on that can occur at some level, maybe of our subconscious, that we're able to manipulate time and space. But we just don't know quite how to do that on a conscious level yet. But for some reason, that psychokinetic ability can blaze forth. And Tesla's concept was, maybe there's a way to, build a machine, that can tap into that. But of course, he never got that far. Technology in Tesla's day, it just wasn't there to do it. There's a lot of people who say, Tesla didn't do any of these things. People think that Tesla, like built flying saucers and was flying around with them and, was trying to shoot Edison with a death ray or something. It's like, no. Tesla came up with the ideas, and it wasn't until years and years later that technology has caught up with his, with his concept and his ideas and are showing that, yeah, he was correct, that you could do all these things.
I think we have to talk about him and other things that you've been involved in again. Tim, thank you for being such a fascinating guest. What are you working on at the moment?
Well, right now I'm working on a project. I'm fascinated by mysterious disappearances of people. There's been all over the world places where people in great numbers over the years just seemingly walk off the face of the earth. And so I'm, doing a lot of research, just trying to see if there's any kind of connections, with this. So hopefully it'll lead to something in the future.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. They may be time travelers.
That's right.
No, I mean, that's actually a serious suggestion. No, that could be the case. Tim Swartz, I want to talk with you again. Thank you so much for making time for me in Jasper, Indiana. Yeah,
that's correct.
All right. If people want to know about you, what do they do? Where do they go on the net?
All right. Well, they can find a lot of my work at www.conspiracyjournal.com. Again, that's conspiracyjournal.com. You can access my books from that site, my articles, and you can subscribe to the free Conspiracy Journal email newsletter. It comes out every week, and it's full of just all the weirdness that happens around the world that week.
And if you missed that address, we'll put a link to that website on our website, www.theunexplained.tv. Tim Swartz, a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. I had a great time today.
The thoughts of Tim Swartz, Emmy Award-winning television producer, videographer, and author. Good to hear from him on The Unexplained, and I guess we'll have him on again soon. Let me know what you think about this show. Go to the website, www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv, and you can leave me feedback, email there, or even make a donation to the show if you'd like to. Thank you to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool, as ever, for getting the show out to you and for designing and maintaining the website. Thank you to Martin for the theme tune, and above all, thank you, wherever you are in this world, to you. Spread the word about The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes. I'll be back soon. Take care.